Hey, one of the words that we hear a lot about at Christmas is the word hope. And I got to tell you that where I first learned hope, the idea of hope, or the concept of hope, I think I first learned about hope at Christmas time. When I was a little boy, my mom and dad would take me to Santa, go to one of the local malls, and I would be encouraged to go up and sit on a strange man's lap wearing the weirdest suit, this red suit. And I'd sit there, and I was encouraged to tell Santa what I wanted for Christmas. And so I had to think about the toy that I wanted most. It got a little bit easier when I started to discover the Sears catalog and was able to go through that and figure out what exactly it was that I wanted. But I would go and sit on Santa's lap, and I would tell him what I was hoping for Christmas. I understood that if I told them that I could anticipate it. I wasn't learning just about the hope of getting a gift, but I also was learning about the hope when it came to the conditions around that gift, because I hoped that I was good enough to get the gift. I was hopeful that my mom and dad would forget about some of my bad moments just in case Santa had to inquire of them. I was hopeful that everything lined up, and so I was able to get the gift that I wanted. Hope is essential in any season. You know, from that moment that I was telling Santa that I wanted something to the moment I got it was a waiting season. And I had to tell Santa, and then I had to hope through the remaining days up to December 25th that I would get what I had hoped for. Hope is essential for any waiting season. Hope is a desire with expectation of obtaining or of attainment or fulfillment. When you're struggling financially, you hope that the wealth or some kind of amount of money will be there when you need it. When you're sick, you're hoping that your health will be restored. When you're in conflict, you're hoping for resolve. When you're tired, you're hoping for rest and rejuvenation. Hope is what we need in unfavorable situations. Well, friends, we're starting this brand new series called Christmas Foretold. And I last year I started to think about how it would be great to just look at some of the passages in the Old Testament that predict that Jesus would be coming as the Messiah. And the passage we're about to look at this morning is about hope. It's found in Micah chapter 5, verse 2, which we'll look at in a few moments. But let me give you a little background to the context of this passage. 800 years before Jesus is born. 800 years before he arrives, that the very first Christmas took place, there was a prophet named Micah who was sent to speak to Jerusalem and Samaria. And he would speak two messages, one of judgment, because Israel and Judah, the two nations that compromised what we would know as Israel today, those two nations had walked away from the things that God wanted from them. And so he spoke to them about the judgments that would be coming. Israel was imploding because of ignoring Yahweh completely. Judah was experiencing a roller coaster of spirituality, some good moments, some bad moments. Maybe you feel like Judah sometimes, that you have some really good spiritual days and some really bad spiritual days. And Micah would foretell of the destruction of both Samaria and Jerusalem. But in the middle of his prophecy, despite him speaking to the problem and telling them what's going to happen, Micah prophesies this one phrase that I hope you grab hold of this morning. And it's this phrase, hope is on the way. Would you say it with me? Hope is on the way. One more time. Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way was a message that would speak of a Messiah who would show up 700 years later. And as he's speaking to both Israel and Judah, he wants them to know that there's going to be destruction, but he also wants them to know that in the midst of their waiting period, in the midst of their difficulty, that hope is on the way, and it's found in a person named Jesus Christ. And that brings us to our passage in Micah chapter 5, verses 1 to 2. It says this, "Marshal your troops now, city of troops, for a siege is laid against us. They will strike Israel's rulers on the cheek with a rod. But you," and this is where the shift goes from judgment to the hope is on the way part, "but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times." Micah's prophecy will be the passage that directs the wise men to Jerusalem. Verse 1 speaks of the difficulty, and it happens near the end of Micah's reign as a prophet, that Samaria and Jerusalem will fall to its enemies. But verse 2 foretells that hope is on the way, and it's found in a person of Jesus. They're going to have to wait for 700 years, but hope is on the way. And friends, when it comes to this Christmas season, I think Micah was prophesying about hope coming, about hope being on the way. And the question is, what hope does Jesus bring? Well, the very first thing I think the passage points to is that Jesus elevates. He elevates. It says, though you are small, out of you will come. And it's talking about this ruler, this Messiah. Out of you will come the Messiah. Bethlehem is identified as the birthplace of Jesus, this small community. And despite the insignificance of Bethlehem, the city will be elevated by Jesus, because of Jesus. This is so important. Bethlehem was a small community, a small, insignificant place. And what Micah prophesies is that the ruler will come and he will elevate this insignificant city to a place that is prominent because Jesus comes from it. I want to tell you something today. When you feel like you are insignificant, when you feel that no one's paying attention to you, when you feel like a Bethlehem, I want to tell you the hope is on the way, and it's found in the person of Jesus. He comes to take those who feel insignificant, and he elevates them. We see this all the time about God. The story is told in 1 Samuel chapter 16, where God is completely done with the king Saul. He's so fed up with them that he says to Samuel the prophet, "Hey, I want you to go to this guy named Jesse's place. I want you to offer a sacrifice and invite Jesse's family to come with you to the sacrifice. And I'm going to anoint a brand new king. I know Saul's on the throne right now, but I want to elevate somebody. So Samuel obeys, arrives where Jesse's home is, and goes to Jesse and says, "Hey, I'd like to invite you and your boys to come to a sacrifice with me." As they're preparing for the sacrifice, the first son comes out. He looks like a king. I mean, he's got a great stature. He's got the good looks. I mean, he's a man's man, if whatever that is. He just looks the part of a king. And Samuel thinks to himself, surely this has got to be the one that God wants to anoint. This is God. Look at what I see. And the Spirit of God speaks to Samuel and says, No. This isn't the person I'm choosing. I don't look on the outsides. I don't look at someone's appearance. I don't look at how their complexion is or what they wear. I'm looking into the heart. It's not him. Next son comes along. That must be him. No, that's not it. Third son, fourth son, fifth son, sixth son. And by the time he gets to the seventh son, he's a little frustrated because there's no more boys. There's no one else for him to anoint. He's done what God's asked. And he turns to Jesse and he says, "Is there anybody else? Do you have just one more boy? Everybody I thought that should be." And he doesn't give it away, but in his mind he's thinking, everybody who I thought should be king is disqualified by God. God doesn't want them to be king. Is there anybody else? And Jesse says, "Well, there's one more boy. He's my youngest. His name's David. But he's out tending the sheep." Now, friends, what's so significant about this is that the shepherd role was such a common role. It was a low place in society. It was nothing prominent. I mean, if you want to talk about the lowly of lowly positions, it's looking after sheep. And it's so important, it's so significant that God arranges the story in this way, that the guy who's going to be king is out doing the lowliest job. And Samuel gets Jesse to call for David. David comes in, and this rugged shepherd who's got sheep stuff all over him, he's sweating and dirty. He stands there, and Samuel comes over to him and anoints him with oil, pours oil over his head, because this is the one that God is going to elevate to be the greatest king in Israel's history until the Messiah comes. You see, God looks for the lowly. God looks for the insignificant. God looks for those who feel disqualified. He looks for those Davids, and he elevates them. And Micah's prophecy is about Jesus' birthplace, and it points to a key trait of this Messiah that he will elevate. During Micah's time, the powerful dictated the land. And they dictated the spiritual state of the land, and everyone else felt that everyone else felt powerless. They had to do whatever the ruler said, the powerful people. And Micah turns to the people who are living under powerful rule and feeling powerless, and he says, "Friends, I want to tell you today that hope is on the way. That hope is on the way. That the one who elevates the forgotten Bethlehems of our society is coming to elevate people today. He's coming to elevate, well, in 700 years, he's coming to elevate." And I want to tell you that that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus selects fishermen. He selects hated tax collectors. He selects the lowest of society. He goes to the women who are in the margins of society, and he places them into ministry roles. He makes children the standard of what it means to approach God. And he devotes his time to the adulterers, to the lepers on the outskirts of society, and the tax collectors. And all these individuals who feel so ignored by society, so powerless, so not prominent. And he says, "Let me step into your lives and elevate you. Let me bring hope into your life. When we feel forgotten, when we feel insignificant, when we feel powerless, hope is on the way. And it's found in the person of Jesus Christ." Micah goes on and he says in chapter 4, verse 6 to 7, this is so beautiful. "In that day, declares the Lord, I will gather the lame. I will assemble the exiles and those I have brought to grief. I will make the lame my remnant, and those driven away a strong nation." Friends, Micah prophesies that the Messiah will elevate those who feel rejected. He will elevate those who are exiles. He will elevate the lame. He will elevate the Bethlehems of society. And if you feel like you're one of those, I want to tell you that hope is on the way, and it's found in the person of Jesus Christ. The second thing we see in this passage is that Jesus reigns. He says, "Who will be ruler over Israel?" Both Israel and Judah had evil rulers. And of the gravest concern at this time was that these evil rulers were using their power to take land away from other more common people. They were using their power to get more rich, and they were doing it at the expense of the poorer individuals. And so the common person didn't know what to do. They looked to those who were reigning in their society, and they felt completely powerless. For the poor, there was a sense of hopelessness. After all, how can someone without power secure justice in an unjust world? And Micah turns to them and he says, "I want to tell you something. Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way." Micah 5 verse 3 says, "He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach the ends of the earth." Friends, oh, listen to this. In the midst of injustices, Micah prophesies, he foretells about this hope, and he says he will stand and shepherd his flock. He will reign like a shepherd. He won't reign like some political power. He won't reign in a way where he's abusing his power. He will reign with justice in his hands. He will reign with a care for the sheep. He will reign like a shepherd. Hope is on the way. November 19th, Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted after killing two men and injuring another. I'm not sure how many of you paid attention to that story. He had traveled to Kenosha after riots broke out because a black man was shot by a white cop 7 times, leaving him partially paralyzed. The community responded or reacted. And riots broke all out through Kenosha, and so 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse made his way to Kenosha, and in his words, to help out, to protect the store owners, to protect those who were facing the violence and the injustices of the riots. And as he got there with his gun, he shot two men dead and injured another. So he was arrested for murder. And on November 19th, the verdict was read, that he was completely acquitted of killing the two men and shooting the other. In that moment, many cried injustice. Many cried out, how is this fair? Here's a man who's killed two individuals and has injured another. How could he be let off? And that group that was against his actions said, this is unjust. There was another group who felt that his arrest was unjust, that every person has the right to arms, that every person has the right to protect themselves, and what he was doing was in self-defense. And so they cried out, this is an unjust case right from the beginning. And as you pay attention to the case, you see both sides crying out injustice. You see injustice being cried out with George Floyd's death. You see injustice being cried out with residential school graveyards. You see injustice being cried out by those who are losing their jobs because they've chosen to be unvaccinated. You see those who have been the victim of somebody else who's been wrong crying out for injustice. And those, each of those individuals, and I could go on with more and more stories about the current realities within our society, we cry out injustice just like the people in Micah's day were saying, the rulers are taking away our lands, they're taking away our riches, this is unjust. And in the middle of injustice we are forced to ask, what do we do? And Micah says, in the middle of injustice, let me tell you something you need to know. Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way. He says the good shepherd will reign and he will do what's right and fair in his timing. The good shepherd. Friends, in the middle of our injustice, we need to know that we have a hope. His name is Jesus, and he will do what is right, and he will do what is fair. And we may not see it up front. We may not see it in our timing, but he reigns as a shepherd. We see this in Jesus. One day, he's walking along with his disciples, and he gets to a place where there's this big crowd. He's not sure if there's like a good sale on some clothing items or what, but as he gets closer, he sees that everybody in the crowd has a stone in their hand. And he's kind of wondering what's going on, and so he gets a little closer, and he breaks through the crowd, and they're yelling at this girl who's on the ground, and she's crying, and she's begging for forgiveness. Please, please don't do it. Please don't do it. And there's a religious ruler right at the front who says, we have the right to do this. We have the right to stone you. And as Jesus begins to ask some questions, he finds out that this woman has committed adultery. And the religious ruler is saying, our law, the law of Moses, and he's right, the law of Moses says that we should stone her. What's interesting is it's just the woman there. It's not the man. There's two people in every affair, but only the woman's there. And we see a moment of injustice again. And Jesus looks at them, and in his wisdom, he sits down on the ground, and he just starts to draw in the sand. And there are so many speculations. We really don't know what Jesus wrote in the sand. Some people speculate that he began to write the names of the sins of those who were holding stones. We don't know, but all of a sudden he stops. And he sees this woman who is the only person who's going to be stoned of the two. And he sees a mob who are claiming the scriptures as their right to stone. And he smiles and looks up at them and says, hey, go ahead. Whoever is without sin, cast the first stone. Well, the conviction runs through the audience. And one by one, they start to drop the stones. And they walk away in defeat. And eventually, this crowd has become nothing but Jesus and the woman. And he turns to her and he says, woman, where are your accusers? Go and sin no more. In that moment, hope showed up. In that moment, justice showed up. In that moment, the ruler showed up, reigning in righteousness and fairness. In the moment, the prophet Micah's words came true because the one who would rule like a shepherd showed up in her life. You see, friends, you may be facing some injustices in your life. You may be frustrated with where our society is going. And I have my own frustrations, and you should not talk politics with me. But so many times we're trying to discourse on injustice when the truth is discourse does nothing. It rests in the hands of the one who reigns. It rests in the hands of the Messiah, the one who will be a ruler, who is like a shepherd, who will care for you. And when you are feeling powerless, and when you are feeling injustice, and when you are feeling that life is unfair and that somebody needs to step in, just like Micah spoke to the people of Israel and Judah, you need to hear the words, hope is on the way. The Messiah reigns, and he reigns in righteousness. Lastly, Jesus readies. Micah says, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. This origins is not beginnings. It means going forth. It means that he's actually been acting from way back before time. And while Micah is pointing to the divinity of Jesus in this passage, he's also referring to another element. Let me explain it in a Christmas way. Every Christmas, we have a ritual around our house on Christmas Day. We get up early in the morning, Ainsley and I. The kids are usually asleep. Often, Ainsley's the first one to get up, and she'll go downstairs and make sure all the lights are on, and might begin to make a coffee for herself. And then she puts on Celine Dion's Christmas every year. And I think it's These Are the Special Times. Is that the song? These Are the Special Times. And she doesn't just play it softly. She plays it so that the neighbors know that we're up. I mean, like it's loud, and so that our kids know that as soon as they hear the French lady singing, that it's time to get up from their beds, and they make their way downstairs, and their hair is a mess, and we come downstairs and sit down. We sit for a few moments, and I'll pull out the Bible, and we'll read through Luke chapter 2. We'll pray and thank Jesus for coming to this earth. And then we will go to our stockings. Sometimes, because in our Christmas morning, we always make cinnamon buns, the Pillsbury cinnamon buns. That's part of our Christmas, and we'll do that. But we'll start with our stockings. And then we go to the Christmas gifts. Now listen for a second. We know that around 8 o'clock a.m., normally, is the moment that we've gone through our ritual and that it's time to open Christmas gifts. But I want you to understand something. Even though we know 8 a.m. is the moment that we open the gifts, we don't go and get the gifts at 8:50 or 7:59. We don't just go, you know, Ainsley turns to me at like 7:59 and goes, "Hey, did you get the gifts?" "No, I didn't get them." "Did you get them?" "No." "How are we going to give it to them at this point?" I don't know. "We're in trouble. Our kids are going to hate us forever." You know, that's not the conversation. Sensibly, we bought gifts way ahead of time. We and most of our gifts are online now. I don't know about you, but I find I spend more time on Amazon than I do in stores. And so we're buying the gifts and we're preparing them. And Ainsley does most of the wrapping because I'm completely dysfunctional on that. I don't know how to use tape or scissors or anything like that. And so she prepares it all. And for weeks in advance, we're preparing for the moment where the gifts are needed. The reason why I tell you this simple little illustration is that Micah is saying that while the Messiah is yet to come for 700 years, the truth is that he's actually been acting prior to this moment. You see, he's been preparing himself. And the question is, if Jesus is available, like if he's already been acting, because he says that this Messiah has been going forth from of old, if he's available right now when Israel and Judah need him, why doesn't he show up right now? And like the gifts, the fact is that Jesus is readying himself for the right moment. This is so important. Jesus is readying himself for the right moment. He's been from the origins of time, and he's been going forth and doing things. And Micah says, look, you're in trouble. You're about to be ransacked Samaria. You're about to be ransacked Jerusalem. But the Messiah is coming. Hope's coming. He's just not going to come for 700 years. And they're like, come on. If he's available, why not now? And Micah says, because this Messiah is readying himself for the right time. The moment that's needed the most. And I want to tell you something. This is so profound that Jesus is always readying himself for the right time. For the right time.
We think that he's always missing out on the right time. But Jesus, who's always been going forth, he doesn't step in until the right time, but he's the righteous ruler, and he understands what the right time is. You see, Jesus' arrival was at a time where Mary and Joseph are on their way to Jerusalem, but God intervenes and causes Mary's water to break, and she starts screaming, "Oh, it's time! It's time, Joseph, we can't go any further." The prophecy might be fulfilled and Bethlehem would be elevated. He arrives at the right time where he follows his cousin John, who will fulfill another prophecy about there being a forerunner to prepare the way for the Messiah. He arrives at a time when Rome has prepared the roadway systems throughout the land so that people can leave the Roman kingdom and go to the uttermost parts of the earth easily, preparing the way for the gospel. He arrives at the time where the postal service is put in place so that letters can be sent to the various churches so that they might hear about Jesus. He arrives at a time where only 2% of the earth's population had lived before this. And after Jesus, there would be exponential population growth so that the majority of all who had ever lived would find out about Jesus Christ. He arrives at the right time. In Galatians 4, verse 4 says, "But when the set time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law." And this phrase, set time, means completed time. That Jesus came when everything was done. It was the right moment. The Messiah was readying himself for the right time. Friends, I want to tell you something. This is so awesome. In our hopeless moments, when we are wondering where God is. I don't know if you've ever been there. Anybody? You ever been there where you're just going, "Where is God? Where is God?" In the moments where you're wondering where God is, I want to tell you that hope is on the way, that Jesus is readying himself. Jesus is readying himself for the right moments. I think about Joseph. He's accused by Potiphar's wife that he's been sexually inappropriate with her. And now he finds himself in a prison, and he's like, "God, come on. You gave me a word that I would, in these dreams, that I would be a great ruler. I've been so faithful. I've been a man of integrity. I've followed your law. And why now? Why am I in a prison now?" But in that prison, it was at the right time because there would be two men who would come into that prison, a baker and a cupbearer. And those two men would have dreams that could only be interpreted by this man, Joseph, the right time. And Joseph would interpret those dreams, and those two men would be released. One would be killed, and one would be restored into the place of the Pharaoh. And when the Pharaoh would have a dream about a soon coming famine in the land, they would remember Joseph, who's in the prison at the right time. And at the right time, God would pull Joseph from the prison to interpret Pharaoh's dream. At the right time, that God would place him into a place of leadership so that he would begin to preserve the food that was needed for the land to get them through this famine. At the right time, Joseph would be brought to leadership to help the Egyptians. At the right time, Joseph would be brought to that place of leadership so that he would protect his own family who had rejected him years before. You see, it was God's perfect timing that Joseph was in the prison. It was in the pit, and it was his perfect timing because he's lining things up for the right time. And you may feel like you're in a pit, or you might feel like you're in a prison, or you might feel like you're in a city that's about to be ransacked by the enemies of the world. But I want to tell you something. Even though you might feel that God is nowhere around, Micah is telling you today that hope is on the way. Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way because Jesus is readying himself for the right time. For the right time in your life. You're facing a difficulty. He's preparing himself for the right time. You're facing a sickness. He's preparing himself for the right time. You're facing a conflict. He's preparing himself for the right time. Our Jesus understands timing better than we do. And he's saying, hope is on the way. And it's in me. It's in Jesus Christ. That's what Micah is prophesying. If you're wondering where God is, hope is on the way. God's readying himself for the right moment. A man was walking through Yellowstone National Park. And all of a sudden, he fell down this hole hundreds of feet to some dirt ground.
It was a spot that was not known by fellow travelers. It wasn't one that was marked out. And he found himself down in this pit, hundreds of feet below the surface level, without food, without water, and in complete darkness, all alone. For 7 days, he began to cry out. He yelled out, "Help! Somebody help! Please help me! Please help me! I need someone to rescue me!" And he would yell all day for 7 days. No food, no water, darkness. Yelling out for help day after day after day. Complete hopeless situation. And on the 7th day, a man was walking the trail. And all of a sudden, he stopped. And he heard something. He listened a little bit more, and he moved towards where the sound was coming. And he pushed away some of the dirt, and he realized that the sound was coming from this hole. It was so far down, and so he marked it and went and got help. And the rescue team came in and rescued this man who'd been down there for 7 days. No food, no water, darkness, all alone, absolutely hopeless. When he was rescued, people interviewed him, and they said, we don't understand. You were down there for all these days with nothing, complete hopelessness. How did you maintain hope?" The man said, very simple. He says, "I looked up and there was this pinhole of light, just a pinhole. Eyes focused on that pinhole, and that pinhole brought me hope that somebody was on the other side of that pinhole to bring me the rescue I needed." And friends, I want to tell you this Christmas, in your dark seasons, in your hopeless seasons, there is a light named Jesus Christ. And he's the one that you need to keep your eyes on. Do not keep your eyes on our political leaders. Do not keep your eyes on our business leaders, our finance leaders, our social leaders, and sometimes not even on our spiritual leaders. Keep your eyes on the light known as Jesus Christ, the Messiah, who Micah prophesied is on the way. He said, "Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way. Hope is on the way." Jesus elevates. Jesus reigns in righteousness. And Jesus is ready for the right time. Hope, my friends, is on the way. But friends, as I'm about to close, I want you to leave this place knowing one phrase. Hope is on the way. In fact, I'd like you to say it with me one more time. Hope is on the way. Micah prophesied about a Messiah who would elevate those who feel so forgotten. He prophesied about a Messiah who would reign in righteousness, speaking to the injustices of our world. And he spoke of a Messiah who was going forth from years ago, but would still be coming sometime in the future, which seems so frustrating. But it was to say that Jesus is readying himself for the right time. Hope is on the way. Let me pray for you this morning. Jesus, I want to thank you that you came. I thank you for the prophecy foretold by Micah, that the Messiah would come. And I pray today that we would be encouraged and there'd be hope in our hearts, that we would know that you will elevate those who feel so pushed down. That God, you reign in righteousness when there's injustice, that you reign like a good shepherd. And I pray that those who feel like God is so far away, they would simply know that Jesus is readying himself for the perfect time, for the right time. Let the phrase "hope is on the way" be in our hearts today, Lord. When we feel dismayed, when we feel frustrated, we believe the Messiah brings hope. Let hope ring in our hearts this Christmas season, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.